Now let's turn to Genesis chapter 44. We're talking about the testing of the sons of Israel, you'll recall, in chapters 43 and 44. And last time we looked at chapter 43, which consisted of the testing of the sons of Israel with regard to jealousy. Now they came down to Egypt to buy some grain. Joseph set up a dinner, and they had Benjamin with him, which was Joseph's brother by Rachel, and he gave Benjamin five times the honor of the other brothers, and he was testing them to see if they would be jealous like they were when they sold him into slavery in Egypt. So they're being tested in regard to jealousy in chapter 43. In chapter 44, they're going to be tested with regard to their loyalty to their brother Benjamin. Now, just by way of review, in case you weren't here, and I see some faces that weren't here last hour, we noted that chapter 43 falls into three parts. Basically, it's a plea of the 10 brothers to take Benjamin along with them back to Egypt to get some more food. Remember, they ran out of food. There was a famine everywhere. They went down to Egypt, and Joseph had become, by that time, the prime minister of Egypt, second only in command to Pharaoh himself. And he was in charge of dispensing the food because he's the one that predicted the famine in the first place. God had given Pharaoh a dream, and Joseph interpreted it that there would be 7 years of famine. So they stored up and prepared for the famine. Well, nobody else did. So when everybody else ran out of food, they came to Egypt because Egypt was, they called it at the time, the granary of the world. So they came to Egypt, and when the brothers came, Joseph disguised himself so they couldn't tell who it was, and he played the part of an Egyptian. And we'll see how much he gets into this part this hour, because he's really going to put it to him by way of a test this time. It's going to be a very hard test. And so the brothers plead with Israel to take Benjamin along because he had at first forbidden it, and the focus of that section was on God's mercy, because Israel said, okay, you can take Benjamin, and I put it in God's hands, and I depend on God's mercy to keep Benjamin safe. And then the favor bestowed by Joseph's steward, remember, when they thought that the bags of money were put in their bags of food by mistake the last time they had come. They had come last time, they bought the grain, paid the money, and Joseph put the money back in their sacks of grain without them knowing it. And when they got home, they opened up their sacks, and lo and behold, the grain was there that they'd bought, and also the money they paid for it. So they thought that was a mistake, an accident. And now they thought they would be blamed for taking that money. Well, they came up to the steward and said, look, that was an accident. We really didn't mean to steal that money, so don't kill us all and make us slaves. And the steward said, don't worry. That money was put there by your God, because I had it. So he's saying the primary cause was God, but I was the secondary cause to put that money back into your sacks, so don't worry about it. You will not be prosecuted for it, as we would say. You won't be prosecuted. So that was the favor that was bestowed by Joseph's steward. And then Joseph, at the meal, gives Benjamin five times the portion of anybody else, and that's the blessing of Joseph on Benjamin. Now, what he's doing here, he didn't do that just because Benjamin could eat five times as much. He did it because that was a sign of honor. And he said, I'm going to honor you with five times as much honor as your other brothers. Well, he wanted to see how the other brothers would react. He wanted to see, are they going to get jealous of Benjamin like they got jealous of me when I was dad's favorite and they threw me in a pit and sold me? Now, are they still that way or aren't they? Joseph wants to reconcile with his brothers, but he doesn't want to reconcile with them if they're still like they were before. So he has these tests prepared for them. He wants to find out. We noted that at the end of Genesis, there are 70 people in nation Israel. We looked at Exodus for that. And in Egypt, where Joseph is going to bring them, they will grow to approximately, the best scholarship says, about 2 million people. About 2 million Jews left and crossed the Red Sea. So the question is this. Are the sons of Israel, and these are the 10 minus Joseph and Benjamin, are they still full of envy? You know, the actions of Joseph in chapter 43 are meant just to test that fact. He's not just being precocious. He's not just being capricious. He's doing it for a reason. He's doing this for a reason. He's testing those brothers. He gives them a reason to be jealous of Benjamin by giving Benjamin five times the portion or five times the blessing of the other brothers. So here's a perfectly good reason to be jealous. And he's going to see what they do. Well, what they do is they pass this test with flying colors. In verse 34, it says, he took portions to them from his own table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. So they feasted and drank freely with him. So even though he was the favored one, they didn't pay any attention to that. They just feasted and drank and had a good time and didn't worry about Benjamin being the favorite. So they passed the first test. They passed the jealousy test. They weren't jealous of Benjamin. Now the question comes to loyalty. How loyal are they to brother Benjamin? And that's what we're going to find out in chapter 44. So the issue involved is this. Would the brothers abandon Benjamin if it became a matter of their lives or his? Now that's a tough challenge, isn't it? And that's what it's going to come to. It's going to come to the point of saying, Joseph's going to tell them, in more or less, that I'm going to give you guys a chance to leave in peace, but I'm going to keep Benjamin here as my slave. So you can go and you can get rid of that brother that's the favorite, and I'll keep him here as a slave. And if they were still jealous, if they were still disloyal, they wouldn't do it. Or they would do it if they were still disloyal. So if it became a matter of their lives or his. In fact, the primary thought in this chapter is testing to find out. And you see it, and that's the Hebrew word yasad, to find out. And it occurs in verse 8, in 44:8. It says, behold, the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks we have brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from the Lord's house? And that word found is the word yasad. And it's found in verse 9 where it says, with whomever of your servants it is found, there's the word again, let him die. And in verse 10, so he said, now let it also be according to your words, he with whom it is found. So see, the idea is finding out here. Verse 12 again. He searched, beginning with the oldest, ending with the youngest. The cup was found out to be in Benjamin's sack. In verse 16, it occurs twice. So Judah said, what can we say to my Lord? What can we speak? And how can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one in whose possession the cup has been found. So we have the central idea of finding out something in this chapter. And that finding out is going to be, are the brothers loyal to Benjamin or aren't they? Especially Judah. And Judah is really going to stand out in this chapter. And this chapter, I think, explains why Judah is the line of Christ and not Joseph. Because Judah becomes a type of Christ in this chapter. Chapter breaks down into two halves. First is the narrative in verse 1 through 17, and that's just the story half. And then the second half is Judah's speech. Now the first half, the narrative, leads up to Judah's speech on behalf of his brother Benjamin in the second half. And that's in verse 18 through 34. So we have a narrative and then we'll have Judah's speech. So let's look at the test. And this is a beaut. The test is in verse 1 through 13. Chapter 44, verse 1. It says, then he commanded, and that he is Joseph, his house steward, saying, fill the men's sack with food as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of the sack. Put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his money for the grain. And he did as Joseph had told him. As soon as it was light, the men were sent away, they with their donkeys. They had just gone out of the city and were not far off when Joseph said to his house steward, up, follow the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks and which he indeed uses for divination? You have done wrong in doing this. So he overtook them and spoke these words to them. And they said to him, why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. Behold, the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks we have brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die, and we also will be my Lord's slaves. So he said, now let it also be according to your words, he with whom it is found shall be my slave, and the rest of you shall be innocent. Now that's the steward speaking. He said, the one I find the cup in is going to be my slave, and the rest of you can go on your way. You can go in peace. Then they hurried, each man lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack. And of course, they all thought that the cup wouldn't be in any of their sacks because they didn't put it there. The steward did. It was a plant. He searched, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes, and when each man loaded his donkey, they returned to the city. Okay, so that's the test. After the meal, Joseph had the brothers' sacks filled with as much as they could hold, and he also put each man's money that he had paid for the grain back in the sack with it. And in addition to that, he put his own silver goblet in Benjamin's sack. Now that's going to be the test, because it's going to test the brother's loyalty to Benjamin. So he puts the real incriminating evidence in Benjamin's sack. So as soon as it was light, the brothers were sent away. Shortly after that, now Joseph sent his house steward after them. And he ordered his house steward to accuse him of stealing the silver cup. Now we have to look at that a little. The charge is in verse 5 and 6. In verse 5 and 6, it says, "Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks and which he indeed uses for divination? You have done wrong in doing this." So he overtook them and spoke the words to them. That's Joseph ordering his steward to overtake them and telling him what to say, and then he does it. Now, it's the cup of divination. Now, people get really upset about this and wonder and worry about it. What in the world would Joseph be doing with a cup of divination anyway? What is a cup of divination? What does that mean? Well, first of all, the main point of it is that it has great value. That's the main point. It's Benjamin has stolen something of very great value. It's the Hebrew word nahash. It means to practice divination. Literally, it means to mumble. It means to mumble out formulas. Now, does this mean that Joseph participated in the pagan practice of hydromancy? And hydromancy is simply this. It's divination, or seeing the future, by means of signs derived from the appearance of water and its movements. So what they would do was they would take a cup and they'd either pour water in it and see how the water looked as it settled, or they would pour water in a cup and put pebbles in it and see what the water, and supposedly by looking at the water and watching the water, they could divine the future. And that makes about as much sense as looking at a chicken's entrails. They had that pagan practice. Now, that is strictly forbidden by God later. So some people say, well, Joseph practiced that because it was before God had forbidden it. And we find that in Deuteronomy 18. Look up at Deuteronomy 18 and verse 9. Deuteronomy 18:9 says, "When you enter the land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not learn to imitate the detestable things of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or daughter pass through the fire." And that was a little practice they had of appeasing their gods, of making their sons or daughters pass through the fire. Well, what it means was it not pass through the fire. They went in, but they never came out. You know, they threw them in a fire, basically. Or they would have a god, an idol built, setting with a bowl on its lap, and they would build fires in the legs until the bowl was red hot and throw their children in it. They called that passing through the fire. Now, not a very nice practice. So God says, don't do that. Don't learn those things from the pagans. One who uses divination. And there we have the commandment against divination. Now, it's given later, so presumably Joseph didn't know it. But it's still something God does not like. So did Joseph use it? Well, I don't think this necessarily means that he used it for divination. I think, personally, he was acting out his role of a powerful Egyptian. And remember, that's what he disguised himself as. And he was a powerful Egyptian. But he wanted to make the brothers think that not only was he powerful politically, but he was powerful on the priestly side too, because he could practice divination. Remember how he sat them according to their age at the dinner table? And they all were amazed at how he could do that. Well, he did it because he knew them. They were his brothers. But now he says, this is my cup of divination. That adds value to it, one. And two, it adds to his power as an Egyptian, which is going to have an effect on the brothers of making them afraid of what he's going to do. Well, that's just my opinion. You could translate that phrase where it says back in verse 44, it says, is this not the one from which my Lord drinks and which he indeed uses for divination? You could translate that, did you think that you could steal this and Joseph wouldn't have divined it or wouldn't have figured it out? That's another translation of that phrase. I don't think it's a really viable translation, but some do. They say that phrase just means, it doesn't mean he uses the cup ceremonially for divination. It just means it's such a valuable cup. Did you think you could steal it without him divining that you stole it or figuring it out? You know, he's no dummy, in other words. What it mainly does is makes this item very, very valuable. So they're accused of stealing something incredibly valuable. Now the test provided the brothers a chance to get rid of Benjamin and to go on their own way. Now, back in chapter 43, we already had the stage set, right? Because Joseph gave Benjamin 5 times the honor of the other brothers, so the stage is set for them to be jealous. Now he gives them a chance to get rid of Benjamin and go on their way. His servant, Joseph's servant, says, I'll take the one who has the cup as my slave and the rest of you can all go. But they don't. They don't go. They go back with Benjamin to stand before the man, as they call Joseph. So the brothers set up to be jealous of Benjamin. And the test would give them a chance to get rid of him. So how do they respond? Well, first, they deny that they had anything to do with it. And they didn't. I mean, they're being honest. You know, they didn't. They didn't steal the money. They didn't steal the cup. Joseph put it there for the test. And they were so confident that they didn't steal it that they offered to become Joseph's slaves if the stolen goods were found on him. I mean, they were innocent. What would you say? Oh, I'm innocent. If you find stolen goods on me, then I'll be your slave. Well, the stolen goods had been planted. So the steward makes a proposal that gives them a chance to get out of it. He says, I won't do that. I'm only going to punish the one who stole the cup. In verse 10, it says, so he said, now let it also be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and the rest of you shall be innocent. So he gives them a chance. Okay, I found the cup in Benjamin's bag. The rest of you guys can go on home now. and I'll just take Benjamin back as my slave because he stole my very, very valuable cup. Well, they don't. They go back with him. And this test gave them a real easy chance to get rid of Benjamin. So after they don't go back, Benjamin is arrested in verse 11 to 13, where it says, "Then they hurried, each man lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack, and he searched, and of course found the cup in Benjamin's sack, and then they tore their clothes, and when each man loaded his donkey, they returned to the city." So they all went back with Benjamin after he was arrested. So Benjamin is arrested, and the brothers had their first chance. They're going to get another chance, but they had their first chance to get rid of Benjamin and go on their way, and with a clear conscience, really, because they didn't know me. They probably thought at this point that Benjamin had stolen the cup. I mean, it would be the natural thing to think. It was found in his bag. But instead, they go with him to help at his defense. So they are being loyal. See, the brothers have changed. There's a dramatic change of character in these guys since they sold Joseph into slavery. I mean, they were cold-hearted back then. They were brutally cold. They threw Benjamin or Joseph in a pit and decided what to do with him. They said, "Well, let's kill him." And then Judah said, no, if we kill him, we won't make anything on him. Let's sell him instead." So they were a cold bunch. Now they've changed. Now their little brother Benjamin, who they have every reason to be jealous of, is being arrested, and they can go their own way, but they go back with him. So you see the change in character that's occurred over the years. Their conscience has begun to function as it's supposed to, and we'll see that in a moment. Now, again, in verse 14 through 17, we have the brothers before Joseph, and they go back to him. Verse 14 says, "When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there, and they fell to the ground before him. Joseph said to them, 'What is this deed that you have done? Do you not know that such a man as I can indeed practice divination?' So Judah said, 'What can we say to my Lord? What can we speak? And how can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one in whose possession the cup has been found.' But he said, 'Far be it from me to do this. The man in whose possession the cup has been found, he shall be in my slave. But as for you, you can go in peace to your father.'" So there's another chance for them to get out of Dodge and dodge the bullet, as we would say. They could go home and be innocent. So we have a formal charge. "What is this deed that you have done?" Now notice again, remember when Joseph first prophesied that the brothers were going to bow down to him, how indignant they were? He said, "I had a dream, and the sheaves and his stood up and the others bowed down to him." And the brother says, "We're going to bow down to you?" And what have they been doing ever since they got to Egypt? They've been bowing down to Joseph. And we have the same thing here. They don't know it, but they're doing, and they were so indignant about it. "I'll never bow down to you." And they threw him in a pit and sold him instead. And now, verse 14, "When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there, and they fell to the ground before him." So they're fulfilling his prophecy again without knowing it. And the formal charge is given. "What is this deed that you have done?" And Joseph's statement That he can practice divination is kind of interesting here. What is he getting at here? He says in the last part of verse 15, "Do you not know that such a man as I can indeed practice divination?" Well, you've got a couple of possibilities here. He could be playing the Egyptian role. You know, you guys are, don't you know how important I am? I can practice divination. Or he could be referring to, notice he doesn't say anything about the cup here. He says, I can practice divination. You know, I'm a prophet. I can prophesy, which is true. I mean, he was a prophet. He could prophesy. So by now, I would think the brothers are shaking in their boots, because here's a guy that was second only to Pharaoh. He could have them killed on a whim if he wanted to. And they're standing before him with a stolen cup, and they have a chance to leave and let Benjamin take the rap, as we would say. But they don't do it. They stay. I think Joseph's statement, first, it doesn't imply that he depended on the cup. He could divine who stole the cup without having it. It's pretty obvious, actually. And he's saying that he has a source of inspiration that is beyond anything that the pagans, the Egyptians have. You know, they have their cups, they have their animal entrails, but he doesn't need any of that because he's a prophet of God. So from now on, Judah is going to be spokesman for the brothers. Now remember, Judah was kind of a stinker before. I mean, this is a Perry Mason type thing. You know, there's no possible way they could get off of this charge. They got the evidence right there. Matlock couldn't have got him off. Think of putting yourself in Judah's place, and he's going to stand up for him. All the evidence points to the fact that Benjamin stole the cup. So there was no way that he could actually prove that Benjamin was innocent. Now, here's something very interesting. Notice how he words things. It says in verse 16, Judah said, "What can we say to my Lord? What can we speak? And how can we justify ourselves?" Remember, there are only the charges against Benjamin, not anybody else, but he uses a plural all through here. And he says, "God has found out the iniquity of your servants." And that's the idea. That's what they're thinking. They're thinking, God found out what we did to Joseph, and now it's time to pay the price. That's, their conscience is beginning to work like it's supposed to. And it says, "We are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one in whose possession the cup has been found." So he's thinking they're all guilty because they were all guilty of selling Joseph. So God is catching up to him. See the God consciousness coming out now in Judah, who was such a stinker before. Now all of a sudden his conscience begins to work. He's starting to be conscious of God's work behind everything. So he acknowledges that they all deserve to be punished. Even though, you know, they're innocent on this account, aren't they? They didn't steal anything. But they're all sinners before God. Last part of verse 16 says, "God has found out the iniquity of your servants." What iniquity is he talking about? Stealing the money and the cup? No, they didn't do that. He's talking about selling Joseph into slavery. He says, God is, you know, God knows we're sinners, and we're going to pay the price now, even though it's not for the particular thing that we did. So they're all guilty sinners before God. So they are overwhelmed all of a sudden with the enormity of what they had done. They didn't even think about it at the time, remember? They just threw Joseph in a pit and went and had supper. But now their conscience is beginning to work. And it's only fair, right? And here's what Judah's thinking. Okay, we sold Joseph into slavery. It's only fair that we should end up as slaves in Egypt, because that's what we did to him. Remember that talionic justice where the punishment fits the crime? That's what he's thinking here. He says, you know, it's only fitting that we should be slaves in Egypt, because that was our crime. We sold Joseph to be a slave in Egypt. So they acknowledge that the men who act against them, the man, as they call Joseph, and his servant and the Egyptians, they're just tools that God uses to punish them for what they had done. That's what their thinking is. So verse 17 now gives the brothers another chance to get rid of Benjamin, get out of Dodge, and have everything be okay. Verse 17 says, but he says, far be it from me to do this. And that's when Judah said, we'll all be your slaves. He says, the man in whose possession the cup has been found, he shall be my slave. But as for you, go in peace to your father. So there's another chance for them to get out of trouble and to lay the blame on Benjamin. And it's another test by Joseph. He's going to see what they would do if he flat gives them an opportunity to say, okay, Benjamin, see you later, sorry, bye. But they don't. They stay. The brothers would rather not go back at all than go back and see what the loss of Benjamin would do to their father. Because what did Israel say would happen if he lost Benjamin, his other beloved son? He said it would kill him. So the brothers know that now. They think, I can't go back without Benjamin, or the shock would kill my father. So that leads us now to Judah's speech. And again, Judah is the spokesperson. And that's in verse 18 through 34. Verse 18 says, then Judah approached him and said, O my lord, may your servant please speak a word in my lord's ears, and do not be angry with your servant, for you are equal to Pharaoh. My lord asked his servants, saying, have you a father or a brother? We said to my lord, we have an old father and a little child of his old age. Now his brother is dead, so he alone is left of his mother, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. But we said to my lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. But you said to your servants, however, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you will not see my face again. Thus it came about when we went up to your servant, my father, we told him the words of my lord. Our father said, go back, buy us a little food. But we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother is with us, then we will go down, for we cannot see the man's face unless your youngest brother is with us. Your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons, and the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn in pieces, and I have not seen him since. And if you take this one also from me, and harm befalls him, you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow. Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, when he sees that the lad is not with us, he will die. Thus your servants will bring the gray hair of your servant, our father, down to Sheol in sorrow. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then let me bear the blame before my father forever. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me? For fear that I see the evil that would overtake my father. So that's Judah's speech. Now, all he does is recaps the story of the close connection between Israel and Benjamin. And he says if they returned without Benjamin, the shock would kill their father. So his intercession now, his speech demonstrates a great love for his brother and his father. So see how the personalities have changed over the years? This is a whole different group of people, especially Judah. Judah has changed dramatically. He offers himself as a slave to Joseph in Benjamin's place. Because he had offered himself as a collateral for Benjamin's safety to their own father. So here he says, I offered myself to my father as collateral, and I'm standing by my word. If you want to punish somebody, punish me instead of my brother. Now, does that sound familiar? Punish me instead of my brother because of my father. Where have we heard that before? Well, he's a type of Christ. He's willing to take the punishment that he doesn't deserve because he loves his father. Remember in John, again and again, I do what my father tells me. I do what my father tells me. I do what I do out of love for my father and my brothers. And that's exactly what Judah is doing here. And Judah now becomes the line through which Messiah will eventually be born. It's the kingly line, the Davidic line. So it's only fitting that he is a type of Christ. In fact, he had become the most Christ-like of all the brothers. So now he is the one whose line will bring forth Messiah. Now this point, this speech, is the high point of the Sons of Jacob stories. This is the very high point, because this is where Judah demonstrates his Christ-likeness. Therefore, he will be the one instead of Joseph. Because you always think, when you read through this, well, now Joseph always did the right thing, and the brothers were always stinkers. How come Judah is the line that brings forth Messiah instead of Joseph, his brother Joseph? Well, because he's the one who is the most Christ-like of all the brothers. Actually, it's because God chose him to be the one, obviously. But here we see it. He is Christ-like. Now, next time in chapter 45, we're going to see the reunion. And Joseph is going to tell them who he is. Now, by now, there can't be any doubt left in Joseph's mind about the sincerity of the brothers. I mean, these two tests that he's given them are pretty much ironclad. He emphasizes and emphasizes how powerful he is and how he could have them offed in a heartbeat, and he gives them a chance to get away, and they don't do it. So no doubt left that the brothers have changed. And in fact, the tests themselves had been an opportunity for spiritual growth for the brothers. And we don't like that concept, but it is a biblical concept that when we suffer, we grow. So not only did the brothers not resent Benjamin, which they could have because he was the favorite, not only did they not resent him, they were willing to share his suffering. At least in the case of Judah, he was ready to die for him. So that puts those two chapters in perspective. They go together. They're the test. Now that the test is complete, chapter 45, we're going to have the reunion. Now Joseph is satisfied that the brothers are changed people, and he will have the reunion in chapter 45. Father, thank you again for your word. Thank you for this history you've given us of nation Israel and how it began and how it's growing now and how Judah becomes the one whose line will eventuate in the Messiah, who will give his life for ours because of his love for us and because of his love for his Father. And it's in his name that we pray. Amen.